Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stefan Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And today it is the weekend before Halloween. Because we've been traveling a lot lately, I can't speak for Samantha, but my plans are to carve a pumpkin and watch a lot of horror movies. I do have one more haunted house that I'm doing on Monday, but that's it. That's all I'm doing.
Oh, well, that's officially the day before Halloween then, huh?
Yes.
It's going to be crowded. Y'all going to have fun.
Yeah, we're going to have
fun. I do not want to go.
No, I figured you didn't. So I hope you're not offended I didn't ask you, because I feel like I know you well enough to know.
Every year you do it, I'm like, you have fun. Bye.
Yes, I will.
I think you did invite me 1 year and I was like, no. That's when I was like, never.
Yes. Yeah. And I love Halloween. I have all of my, like, I have my pumpkin. I'm going to carve it, as I said, this weekend. And I've got my pumpkin candles. I like the vibe of it. But I am tired. I'm tired. I've been traveling a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to stay in. But one of the things I think about a lot with Halloween are foods. I think a lot about kind of like fall foods, autumnal foods, if you will. And we did this episode a while back about kind of these old traditions around food and Halloween, like using an apple to predict your future or something like that. And as I have been speed watching all of my horror movies, I have seen that in a lot of them. But also in this one, we talk about gender differences in costumes. And I just recently saw a side-by-side. And it wasn't even about gender differences in costumes. It was just a side-by-side of two costumes of the same thing. And the costume for girls was much more sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
So this is still going strong. But yeah, we hope that you have a fun, safe weekend, whatever you celebrate or don't celebrate. And we would love to hear about any of your traditions, any of your costumes. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That would be amazing. But in the meantime, please enjoy this classic episode. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I'm Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. So, Samantha, the other day I was talking about this old game I used to play. That I'll get into more in a second, but it was a predictive game,
right,
of learning who your husband, or getting a clue who your future husband would be. And you had no idea what I was talking about.
Still don't.
Did you do anything like that? Like where you were trying to figure out any clues about who your future partner would be?
I mean, we played the match game and then the little
fortune teller game.
Oh, the fortune teller. Yeah.
Those games, but I've never had a real tradition. I know that there is one for Mardi Gras. Is it a Mardi Gras cake where they have a baby, a ring, and something else in a cake? And if you find that, then those are supposed to be significant of sorts. Those are the only things that I know. And I don't know if that's Mardi Gras. Is it Mardi Gras?
Mardi Gras has the baby cake. I believe there is a version that has like a ring or something.
I know we did it at a wet, like a shower. And I thought it was really weird because I'd never seen that. And that was a college friend who they did this for at a bridal shower, bridal lunch. Mm-hmm. And I was looking around like, what? So I was still confused. So obviously, I don't know these traditions very well.
Well, you are in for a treat just in time for Halloween. It is interesting. I believe I've heard of that cake thing you're talking about, too. And I believe it's supposed to predict who's getting married next.
Okay, yes.
Similar to catching the bouquet at a wedding, which is hilarious for me because I'm very competitive and I've like always caught it.
I have
no interest in getting married. Oh, I'm so competitive. I'm like the person that's like bending down. Here we go. And then all these dudes will come up to you afterwards and they're like, congratulations. And you're like, yeah, I caught it. Clearly not what they're talking about.
Oh, and that's king cakes.
King cakes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, normally in my experience, a king cake doesn't have... It is a Mardi Gras cake, but it doesn't have the ring. But yes, I think in some
versions,
it's a baby. Yeah. Okay, but yes, since Halloween is right around the corner as we're recording this, and as you listen to it, if you listen to it right when it comes out, we wanted to dig into some Halloween traditions that involve women and some more modern takes on these traditions or some more modern things that are going on, including games and costumes. And one of them is... this sort of food tradition of like a food predicting who you're going to marry. And it is one thing that I've been really curious about, this idea, and especially around Halloween, of these traditions around women eating or using certain food so that they can figure out something about their future spouse. And it's usually a husband. It's very heteronormative. And this is something that I come across surprisingly regularly over at the other podcast I do, Savor, which is all about food and drink. We just did an episode on rosemary, and there's a highly specific game girls used to play, and there's even a more modern version where you put like your phone, and it has to have a picture of rosemary on the screen under your bed. If you do, you'll dream about your future husband. But before phones... or you could get a printed picture, because that also works. People would put sprigs of rosemary under their pillow. Girls, specifically, would put sprigs of rosemary under their pillows. And if you dreamt and you saw the blurry face of a man, that was your future husband. But if it was a clear face, that's not him. You stay away from that guy. Which I love, because it's so vague.
Okay.
Yes. Another tradition involves a ring hidden in a potato, indicating who will get married next. Or, yes, the one I did that I mentioned at the top, and I think I've mentioned a few times on this show. I used to peel an apple, and you toss the peel. For some reason, I remember it specifically being over your left shoulder, but I don't think it matters. I guess it really doesn't matter in a lot of ways, but it was supposed to form the initial... of the first name of your future husband if you left it outside for a couple of hours. And I got a D or perhaps a C, which I do think are like the easiest
letters
it was gonna form.
Right, or O. Yeah. I need to know if someone got a Y.
Yes.
I need to know if someone got a Q. I need to know if someone got like any of those. Like a T.
Yeah.
Like, did you get any of those letters? Because that would be more shocking.
Yes.
For me.
Yes.
Or how many of those people who actually did marry a D, C, or O, which I imagine is Z or L or I. Like, those are the people.
We'll see. I mean, I got my whole future ahead of me. Of course, they're games. They're just games. It makes sense to me that girls who we've long taught that getting married is the end all be all, and for a good portion of history, something their future and security and happiness depended on, would have these rituals around predicting who it was they were going to get married to. I believe we've talked before about MASH. Like, that was a really popular thing that we would play.
Oh, I played MASH. Apparently, I call it a different thing because I didn't want a shack.
What did MASH stand for?
I didn't even want a shack, so I got a cabin.
So you changed it.
The mansion, apartment, cabin, or house.
I love this.
It made
this.
More
you,
sense.
You made the rules fit you.
I didn't know I was living in a shack.
That's fantastic. I love that. I feel
saying.
Like that says a lot about you. I really appreciate it.
I made my own future, damn it.
I love it.
But anyway, so many of these games were ideally performed on celebratory days when seasons were changing, like Halloween. I know there's a lot of autumn festivals, and the Maypole thing is very seasonal as well. Like spring, mm-hmm. right? Spring to summer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when people believed that the veil between the living and the dead was thinner, potentially allowing them to see into the future to get some sense of what was coming. Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. So Halloween and its predecessor festivals in Europe also marked the end of the harvest, beginning of winter, less sunlight hours, periods some worried may one day never end. I feel like that's plot to a show. What show is that? To that end, people would celebrate and make offerings to gods and spirits. And food was often a part of all of this, including something called the dumb cake, though it came around a bit later.
Yes, and shout out to Jan, who's been listening to all the backlog, and it's been wonderful to hear from Jan as they work through, for bringing this one to our attention and pointing us out to this very helpful and fun article over at Atlas Obscura, written by Anne Eubank, about this whole thing. Also, shout out to listener Renee for calling in about using the word dumb and how hurtful it can be in the deaf community. And we're going to try to do better in the future. This is the name of this cake, but we're going to try to use it as little as possible. But always appreciate these notes so we can do better.
Oh, BT Dubs, because this just reminded me of the fact. So I just rewatched American Horror Story, some of the old seasons, and they do talk about Halloween and the fact that during the season of the witch season, rather, uh-huh. where Madame Laurie coming back and she was like, oh, it's Halloween already. Do I need to set out the lanterns and get ready for the bonfires and the festival? Essentially, she talked about it. I was like, oh, yeah, that used to be the whole jack-o'-lantern thing. But then a listener also pointed out the fact that we forgot to mention Sarah Paulson being a scream queen. I was like, oh, uh-huh. yeah. Because she has that trend going on TikTok saying, help me, the killer is escaping.
Okay.
Anyway, this just reminded me of all of those things. So I feel like I needed to say that. And thank you to our listener for reminding me of that. Keep going.
Yes, yes. She did appear on some list. Yes. Okay, so from the 1700s to 1900s, unmarried women in the UK and North America would take part in this baking ritual to divine their future husbands. As far as games go, it was more of a spooky sleepover game, kind of like Bloody Mary, with the goal of seeing your future husband in your dreams. That's a recurring theme, is it's like in your dreams, you're going to see this person. The origins of it are hard to pin down, but it was probably first played in or around Scotland, perhaps a riff on eating bread on Shrove Tuesday to see your future spouse. Though again, different versions of this game have existed around the world for pretty much forever. And listeners, we would love to hear if you have any experience with any of these or if you have any history in your country with any of these. Please, please let us know. The first known written description of this cake appeared in a 1685 book on witchcraft by George Sinclair called Satan's Invisible World Discovered. Sinclair, a demonologist and mathematician, likened it to a very silly and potentially dangerous superstition.
The world discovered. Damn,
I
okay.
know.
That's the whole thing. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So in the early days, they were certainly viewed by Christians as an unsavory remnants of pagan religions that would bring evil down upon any fool to partake in them. You fool, Annie, you're one of those now.
I know, the apple peel. I didn't know.
It's damned you. Sorry. For instance, take this quote from the 1750s book, God's Revenge Against the Breakers of the Ten Commandments. That execrable way of making what is termed a dumb cake with 1,000 other tricks in order to see or dream of their sweethearts, which are still too much in use among young maidens in order to satisfy their insatiable curiosity and inexcusable impatience.
inexcusable impatience.
How dare thee take on such witchcraft?
How dare thee?
I'm really bad at this.
Yeah. Wow. I thought it was great. I mean, I guess we should put a note in here. Like, again, it's really easy to make fun of things like this because it sounds silly, but I did the same thing. And especially at this time, your whole future was really, as a young girl, riding on this future sweetheart or spouse.
Right.
So it just really, really makes sense to me. And I know we've talked about witches and witchcraft, and especially right. women around that. And, you know, it led to violence and suspicion of what usually just young girls or maybe beliefs that didn't fit into this very strict idea of Christianity. So it's, yeah, just a note.
Right.
This guy, I'm sure, was terrible. He sounds like a real piece of work.
A real piece of work.
He does. No one's too sure where the name came from. Either some suspect it comes from an older definition for dumb, meaning silent. Others think it might be derived from the Middle English definition for doom, meaning fate or destiny. But wherever it came from, it was incredibly popular for a couple of centuries in the UK and North America, to the point accounts of it appeared in news stories, folklore anthologies, and even research papers. These accounts paint a general picture of how it went. Late in the night, maybe around midnight, two or three girls gathered together to bake a cake in complete silence. And side note, I love how many of these games involve complete silence, almost as if the parents created them or something. The ingredients were simple, typically including flour, salt, and water. Each girl then wrote their initials into the cake, and then it was placed into the oven to bake. Again, total silence. Once done, the girls pulled the cake out of the oven and broke it, perhaps each taking a bite. Then they walked backwards to their beds, placing their piece of cake under their pillows and going to sleep so that they could dream of their future husband.
So they didn't eat it. They spit it out and put it under their bed.
Sometimes I think they took a bite, but there was still a piece left to put under the pillow.
Sounds messy.
It was a harder cake than what we're used to. It was kind of a
corn cake type
tougher.
Of thing.
Yeah.
All right. Just checking. Yeah. And as you're talking about, yeah, I can't imagine what these processes were like, because if you didn't dream of someone, that means you were doomed, right?
I'm sure that it wasn't it sounds like, as we're going to get into it in a second, it was kind of scary no matter what. If you saw someone, it was kind of scary. If you didn't see someone, it was kind of scary. There was a lot of fear around it, which again also makes sense to me if this was something you truly believed. But also the Atlas Obscura article I mentioned earlier, the author and a friend attempted this. And it was funny because she was like, I dreamed of nothing. not a damn thing.
Well, yeah. So that would be the less frightening outcome. Right. So in some versions, the husband was supposed to show up. And here's a quote from an 1816 description. Man, we have good records on this. Quote, a few minutes after midnight, the husband of her who was to be first married will appear to lay his hand on the part of the cake marked with her name.
That does sound a little creepy to me.
Why are you in my bedroom?
Yeah, come on. Oh, and speaking of, sometimes the boyfriends were pretty annoyed at being summoned in some versions of these, as in this 1913 article about folklore out of England by Angelina Parker. Quote, an old lady once told me that a girl in this way brought her future husband, who was a soldier, into the room, and in passing through the doorway, he broke his sword in two. The girl picked up the broken piece and kept it. After she had been married to him some years, in turning out her trunk, she came across it and showed it to her husband. And he was so angry, he could hardly forgive her. He told her he suffered dreadful agonies during the time she forced him to appear, although he did not then know the reason.
More way to blame a woman.
One more way. True. These mysterious agonies, it must have been you.
You.
It's the only explanation. Mm-hmm.
Oof. That could have been a whole plot point.
I'm not sure I've ever seen like a horror version story of what we think is a romance, and then it turns out to be it was very painful for the other person involved or something. I think I've seen some fairy tale versions that are similar, but not quite.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
In another version of this game, a dark shadow would appear upon the breaking of the bread, chasing the girls. And the only salvation from a mysterious but surely terrifying fate was to jump straight into bed. Again, I love how many of these. I don't know if I'm right, but it just feels like parents trying to get their kids to go to sleep and be quiet. Get into that bed or else.
Go to straight to bed or your future husband's going to come in. Chase you?
Terrify you. And at least once, making one of these cakes did lead to disastrous real-world consequences. Three girls working at an English estate accidentally made their cake using a poisonous ingredient. That night, they woke members of the estate with their agonized screaming. One actually died. The other two survived, only to be derided in the news as, quote, two deluded females. But again, as one writer put it in 1849, a young maiden will go through a great deal in order to get some kind of answer to a question that so deeply involves her happiness.
Here's a description of the whole thing by Charles Dick from 1911. Quote, the two must go to the larder and jointly get the various ingredients. First, they get a bowl, each holding it, and wash and dry it together. Then each gets a spoonful of flour, a spoonful of water, and a little salt. When making the cake, they must stand on something they have never stood on before. They must mix it together and roll it. Then they draw a line across the middle of the cake, and each girl cuts her initials each on opposite sides of the line. Then both put it in the oven and bake it. Seems like a really big bonding time. Annie, should we try this?
I think we should. The silence part will be hard. And if I have to walk backwards anywhere, then I'm done for.
Yeah, because if I have to go down some stairs, ooh.
No. So this is actually the one, I believe, that the Atlas Obscura article that they used. And my favorite part was them trying to find something to stand on that they'd never stood on before.
Can we get a piece of carpet that we just buy?
I'm sure.
Net? Okay.
I think I could find things in your apartment. Or do I've I never have stood to like, on.
Yeah. Do I have to go to someone's house I've never been before and never stand in front of that place?
I think the friend had an easier time finding something. Oh, no. Okay, no. That's too much. That, I got to put the foot down. Well, if we revisit it, I think that could be fun. We'll let you listeners know how it goes.
If we find out.
Yes, yes. But for now, let's talk about bobbing for apples and the related game Snap Apple, which sounds slightly terrifying. I can't wait to talk about it. As a summer slash fall fruit, especially in here, we're still talking about mostly European, North American traditions. Apples were often involved in early Halloween celebrations and used in soothsaying rituals. On top of that, they have a long history of being seen as somewhat magical. I'm sure, like, off the top of my head, I'm already thinking of Snow White. There's just a bunch of, like, Eve. There's a lot of imagery around apples. You can go see the episode Saver did on apples. We go into that and why that is a little bit. So if you want to learn more. As mentioned earlier, there's the using of the apple peel to ascertain the initial of your future spouse. Another, though, was bobbing for apples, a tradition that most likely originated in Europe and perhaps specifically Britain. It started off a bit differently than what we do now. Have you ever bobbed for apples, Samantha?
No.
Nope.
It just didn't seem sanitary.
Especially now, I'm like, what were we thinking? I think I've only done it once, and I was so bad at it. I never got an apple, and I hated it. It was pretty miserable,
like,
to be honest.
Have a giant mouth, and then also really good teeth, and I do not have either one of the... Well, I do have a big mouth, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, now I have, with my front fake tooth, I would never attempt something like this.
My teeth are so sensitive, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It, like, bounces away. It bobs away. But there was never any who's your future spouse going to be element when I thought of it or that one time that I played it. It was just, can you get the apple? But there did used to be. In one version of this tradition, as it used to go, girls and women would secretly mark the apples and put them in a barrel of water. Then, potential matches would dunk their heads into the water and bite into an apple as a way to look into romantic futures or bring people together. However, in some parts of Scotland, bobbing for apples once and still does. Listeners, please write in if you know. Share the same name as the practice of dunking women in water to test if they were witches.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that sounds awful.
Yeah, yeah. It's also interesting to me. Again, this all makes sense in terms of a game people would play, but it's also kind of like teenagers being shy about asking out somebody.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that element as well. On the other hand, there's Snap Apple. This one is a Halloween tradition also from the British Isles that has roots in paganism. Here's how it went. The goal was to snag an apple in your teeth without using your hands. Instead of dunking your head into water, the apple was attached to one end of a stick while a burning candle was attached to the other end. The stick itself was dangled from a string, and then the whole thing was spun around. The player then tried to get the apple, but failure might mean a candle in your face. Woo! Getting the apple first could either mean you were going to be happy in love or that you'd be the first to be married. A similar related version of this game called for suspending a hoop from the ceiling. The hoop was adorned with various candies, peppers, breads, cakes, and apples. Depending on what food the player got, it foretold the nature of their marriage, like spicy or sweet.
I don't like any of those games.
There's some risk involved, for sure.
Yeah, I guess I would rather have the latter than, but still.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as our friend and coworker Lauren likes to say, they didn't have Netflix back then. So
That's fair.
Gotta find your own entertainment, I suppose.
So one tradition claimed that you would take an apple to the mirror, shine a candle in it, and eat the apple, which would cause your future husband over your shoulder to appear. Ta-da! That sounds like a Bloody Mary game right there. Mm-hmm. In another, you'd cut an apple into 9 pieces, and after you'd eaten the 8th, your lover would appear to ask for the 9th. All of these things are, how the hell did you get in my house, bro?
They do sound, I mean, for someone who watches a lot of horror movies, this doesn't sound romantic. However, like I said, some of them were viewed as something like Bloody Mary. It was kind of freaky. But okay, enough about apples. Let's talk about nuts. Nuts were also used for seeing into the future to figure out who you were going to marry. In some places, Halloween may have been called Nutcrack Night or the sacrifice of the nuts because they were used so much in these sort of future attempts at seeing into the future. Women would name the nuts and put them in the fire. If the nuts cooked together and smoothly, that was good for your chances with that person the nut was named after. If the nuts jumped and cracked, not so good, not looking good. Another belief held at this time was that if a man brought a woman walnuts, it was true love, which again, it feels like if the man knew that,
then yeah,
it's just like
just either claiming you.
Right. Right. I mean, with all of these, there's a lot of historical distortion of trying to understand what people believed back at this time. And a lot of differing accounts. And I did read one where it was actually the opposite. And if the nuts cooked slowly and together, it meant boring times ahead for you with that person. But if they jumped and cracked, it's going to be really exciting and fun.
So the bit about like him bringing you nuts is kind of a little more of what I had thought of as a kid. Like I had 2 to 3 specific things that my future husband would do for me to know that he was the one. Uh-huh. And I did have that, and it was very specific. It has not happened. Just saying that.
That feels like practical magic territory you're getting into.
Oh, it kind of is. You're right. Uh-huh. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I had that as a kid. Like, these are the things that I know that I love. And if he does these 2 things, because I had 2 specific, very specific things, then I know he's the one. Which is makes me kind of gag a little bit. But hey, whatever. A little bit nauseous on that one. But anyway, so let's talk about cabbage. Yes. Types of cabbage, or once, I feel like this is very Korean for some reason. I don't know why. I feel like a lot of Asian food just has all the cabbage. So I'm like, okay, this feels right. So types of cabbage were once believed to have Halloween love predicting properties too. What a delight. I love cabbage. I'm not sure about these things, but here's a fun, vague one. Great. Women would go into fields, pulling up stalks of kale, examining them for things like length, girth, taste, weight, to kind of get an idea of what their relationship with their future spouse would be like. So is it kind of phallic? Am I picturing this right? Am I wrong? Or is it just about the entire relationship? Do I just have a dirty mind?
It could be either or, Samantha. Okay. It was a lot of like, a lot of it's wordplay, right? Like if it's long, then the relationship will last long.
Oh, or, see, I was completely, okay, right. I'm being dirty. So loss of earth clinging to the roots were often interpreted as a substantial dowry. Didn't the dowry come from the woman?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Okay. It was supposed to be the woman's family.
Okay, so this is for guys too then.
No, I think it was like, I would assume that at the time you would interpret that as getting married to somebody higher up.
Okay.
Could ask for a bigger dowry.
Okay. So if a woman was looking to live a bit more on the wild side, she could steal a cabbage and see who she met on the way home. And over in Ireland and Newfoundland, the dish Culcannon made of cabbage and potatoes, people would hide a ring and button underneath it. And whoever found the ring was going to get married soon. And the button portended you would never marry. Oh, that's so sad.
It can be.
Yeah, I guess so. Yes, yeah, so I mean, the person that says that I don't want to be married. That is a really interesting reaction from me because it's supposed to be how it's supposed to be seen.
Right.
But yes, I'm absolutely the person that's like, I don't want to be married. That sounds awful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not to harp on this point too much, but it's still a big deal now, don't get me wrong. But back then it was a much bigger deal for women.
A woman's value was in marriage. Absolutely.
Yes. And also as a game, you know, sort of similar to Old Maid. And this is still something we have to shake today culturally, but like there's nothing worse or scarier than being an old unmarried woman. So I can imagine at a party, you're like,
which is still being used. Yeah, on social media, being like, this is why you're going to be alone. Like, it's the worst thing to put on someone. They're like, okay, cool.
It's fine. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks.
Yeah. And that's just a sampling. There are so many of these, and these were Halloween focus, but again, listeners, if you've got some or if you played some, let us know.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We did want to talk briefly about costumes, and we've done several episodes in the past around women's costumes and even the history of Halloween, and especially here in America and the commercialization of it and how women were heavily involved in the early days. So this is going to be a much more modern look. Also, thanks again to Jessica, who suggested we look into this. So there has been some recent research around gender differences in costumes and why these differences matter. The researchers dug through 1,600 costumes in this recent research on two online costume superstore websites, sites that have a fairly strict line between men's costumes and women's costumes, same with boys and girls. Some of the findings of this research weren't surprising. Women's costumes are tighter, sexier, and if that wasn't what a woman wanted, there weren't many options outside of that. We've all heard the arguments, I'm sure, around why do women always have to wear sexy costumes? It's slut-o-ween. Oh no. But if the only options for women are sexy, which shouldn't really be an issue if that's something the person in question wants to wear, then we're limiting what women can dress as and then judging them for it. In the words of one of the researchers, Aaron Hipple, the issue isn't really that adult women are wearing sexy costumes. Women should be allowed to choose what we wear all year round. The issue is that there are limited choices. If one shops on the women's side of the Halloween sales floor divide, the choices are very limited. So it sends this message that women and girls should be sexy, that their looks are front and center and should be front and center, and that their bodies are for consumption for the male gaze. Again, if you want to dress sexily, totally should. Big believer in that. but it's the issue of options.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they've got numbers to back this up, too. So they found 88% of women's costumes showed skin compared to 16% of men's. The number is 68% for girls compared to 1% of boys. So since for a good chunk of the people who are celebrating Halloween are celebrating it in public, Halloween falls in cooler months. That means options for comfort and warmth are limited unless you are like me and you get a onesie and you're like, nah, I'm good, bro, in my panda onesie.
I have had so many cold Halloweens. I remember there was a cold snap in Atlanta when I was in college. So, you know, many years ago, and just being so cold and uncomfortable and going home because my costume was very skimpy. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, 93% of women's costumes were tight, even uncomfortably so, compared to the 28% of men's. And that's 49% of girls versus 5% for boys.
Yes. And I had a friend that almost passed out once from her tight Harley Quinn outfit. So you can get really uncomfortably tight.
Right.
Not
and
good.
For those that are just like pre-manufactured, obviously very cheaply made costumes is typically the worst material size, like for young prepubescent girls, and the fact that it's thin and see-through. Not necessarily on purpose. It's just the made the way it is. So it's like, this is the worst combination of costuming, or they're ridiculously expensive. And I'm like, I'm not spending $150 on that antique dress.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's another good point, is if comfort isn't a priority for women's costumes. And it's, again, kind of sending this message that it's not about you. And it's about how you look and how other people see you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in interviews, the researchers described how they would have to go through several pages of women's costumes before finding one that wasn't sexualized. Whereas for men, their very first option wasn't. Nice. This finding put out numbers that demonstrate just how big this gender gap is. And I was just thinking about this too. Like, if you think about even historical levels of costumes, they're all made sexy. And you're like, that's not what it was. And you kind of have this moment of trying to figure out why something that is already nice has become even beyond. And then we won't talk about the cultural appropriation that happens within these costumes, but how they're also sexualized. I was thinking about, there was just a recent argument on TikTok, because I'm now officially on TikTok all the time and I need to ban myself from it, but whatever. The whole idea of why people are arguing with other people about, why can't I dress up as Pocahontas? Why can't I dress up as Mulan? And being there to be like, it's not the point that you may have really liked these, what you know of as Disney characters, but the appropriation of what you're doing and what you're trying to do, especially when we're talking about indigenous communities, hey, watch it. And then especially the overly sexualized tones of these costumes and what you're doing it for. It's not because you're doing it because you appreciate these individuals and you see them as iconic. You're doing them because you're being a sexy version of something that is known, and that's disgusting on so many levels.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting how it's such a big accepted kind of thing about like women's costumes will be sexy, that I think that just the other day I heard like 3 or 4 jokes about it, you know, sexy crayons or sexy, just like random object.
Right.
And it's sexy.
Right.
Yeah. And I know I've heard, and I suppose there could also be an argument that this is one of the only times of year women feel it's acceptable to dress as sexy as their heart desires, which is also a problem. Most likely, all of these things are going on at once. I remember one year I dressed in a cute, what I was like, modest outfit and went around telling everyone I was tired of having sexy costumes, only sexy costume options. I just remember being at this party and being like, already kind of going off about this.
So I'm a proponent of being really silly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of the things that I try to do for Halloween. And there have been some moments of like me trying to be sexy did not pull off really well. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable in feeling like something that I am not on a constant basis. And that has, again, the bigger conversation of being sexualized, fetishized, as well as just not having confidence. So it's all kind of a layered bunch.
Right.
But the few times that I have, I'm like, this is really bad. So one of the costumes that I did, because as an Asian person in a white community, I always felt like I couldn't dress as anything and be that. Like I couldn't be the Asian version of something. Like that just felt wrong and felt weird. And I will say that because it felt like I was trying to put myself in a hierarchy, trying to be white, not because I didn't want to be one of the white people. It was because I was ashamed for not being white. So I couldn't possibly be accepted as white. So that's, again, a different conversation. So I dressed up as a geisha, as being an Asian person. Like, oh, this is one thing that I can be, that can be kind of sexy. And then coming back to realize, holy shit, I'm fitting into that same narrative of sexualizing and fetishizing women with this whole moment of the memoirs of geisha coming out and be like, this was written by a white man. Do we really want to go into all of this? You know, like this is all of those things. But coming back to realizing, even though it is kind of more accepted because I am at least an Asian woman doing it. I had two white friends do it with me, by the way. Whole big conversation in that. That wasn't their fault. It was my idea. I will say to that. But it was problematic then and problematic now, me going back to looking at it and being like, oh yeah, okay, I did bad. And even though I am Asian, this was bad on me as well. And that bigger narrative of why do I feel like the only things that are sexy are a fetishization of what men think of Asian women, and which is what it can be dangerous for Asian women. Like there's such a bigger narrative of this conversation that it's okay to be sexy. Be the sexy crayon if you want to and you're feeling good about it. Go ahead. Be your sexy self in that, but have an understanding that, yes, there is a lot of backlash, and that's the bigger conversation of what it is, especially for women, once again, to sometimes feed into the stereotype that can be really harmful. Or if you're a white person, be like, but I want to be a Squid Games person. Please don't do the eyes. Please don't do that. Don't be racist. That is racist. That is not good.
No. And we have, I mean, for something that feels on its surface level very frivolous, there are so many aspects to this. And we've talked about a few before, and I've talked about how sometimes I feel really self-conscious when I do like my Winter Soldier outfit, which I don't think is very sexy, but it's slightly sexy. And kids see that. And it's like, you know, I like it and I feel good in it, but I know that kids are observing that and they're observing how men might treat me in that. And then that's makes me feel weird. That makes me feel strange.
But that's, again, the conversation of like, why are we not putting the responsibility on men?
Yes, men. Absolutely. It shouldn't, again, it shouldn't be like, oh, I'm this object for you to just treat however you want to treat. But it does turn into that. And I hate when kids see it because it's just like, I don't want to contribute to this.
And you're right. And then it becomes that's the lesson of the story, not the other way, other problem of the fact that you have been taught as a child and or the parent has been teaching the child, oh, see the girl? Don't do that because she's the problem. And that's not that's not the truth in this at all. And of course, and I know I'm preaching to the choir when we talk about all of this, but this, again, same like strip down of the fact that if done appropriately, everything has to be in that caveat. If done appropriately and you feel sexy and you feel good about it, then wonderful. Let's talk about the fact that that is not an open invitation for us to be oddled. If you want to look at from afar and appreciate, because sure, maybe they put some time in that outfit and do want compliments. Okay, if they don't, and if they're uncomfortable by you, then don't.
Yeah. Yep. Never touch. Always ask before you take a picture.
So many thoughts.
Anyway.
So many thoughts.
Yes, yes. And I was also thinking, I guess there's an argument that in our entertainment, a lot of women's costumes are more sexualized, their costuming in general. And if Halloween costumes are at least in part based on entertainment, then it filters into that too. That doesn't explain things like sexy Bernie costume, but it does explain a lot of other things. That sexy Bernie meme costume I saw the other day.
Yeah, I just saw a sexy Ted Lasso costume.
Oh.
And I didn't know. I had a moment of, huh.
See, yeah, I guess my thing would be, is there a non-sexy women's Ted Lasso costume?
Oh, I've seen a few, yes.
Yeah.
Cosplaying just straight.
Right, but could you buy one at like the store?
Oh, no. So the sexy, I will say the sexy Ted Lasso, she made on her own. It was pretty good. I was like, well, damn, okay.
Awesome.
I was just like surprised by it. I don't know why that it doesn't enter my head to do things. I was like,
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Like, that's all I could think.
It's on people's minds, that's for sure. So going back to this research, these are not the only findings they had. They also discovered women and girls' costumes rarely come with masks. 1% and 4% of women's and girls' respectively come with masks, compared to 35% and 46% of men's and boys'. Why? Researcher Lori Heyer speculates, we found that girls' and women's costumes provided less coverage and accentuated the wearer's own physical attractiveness as the character herself rather than her costume character, so that she became the featured subject. It seems that girls' costumes had to fulfill demands for feminine ornamental display. She must not simply be a princess. She must display herself as pretty in her princess costume. On the other hand, costumes for boys and men put the alternate identity and character at the forefront. Hires went on, costumes marketed to girls and women consistently promise that she will look cute, sexy, pretty, and all eyes will be on her. Whereas costumes marketed towards boys typically promise that they will be strong and tough or scary and gross. And then, yeah, I read another interesting article about this. I wasn't sure how much weight to put in it. But they were saying, like, you know, the original intent of Halloween, which we are way off of what it was originally, right, was that you were supposed to hide your face and, like, hide right, your identity. And that was the costume so that, you know, ghosts or spirits couldn't find you. I do think that's interesting. And I mean, it's just hard for me to, like, make that argument in our modern times when we've just gone so far away from that. Right. But that is an interesting point when it comes to these boys' costumes having so much more coverage and mask, whereas women's and girls generally don't.
Right. I will say one of my favorite costumes that I did was the Grudge ghost. And I just followed people around making the noise.
Ooh, freaky. Yeah.
I was, and I stay in character, so I'm super annoying.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, like an hour in, that noise is no longer scary. It's just...
Well, no, I still did it enough that it freaked people out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they would all say, stop, Samantha. Sound. And I'd be like, what?
I appreciate your dedication.
Thank you.
Commitment.
So another study found that costumes of strong feminist historical icons are lacking when it comes to costume stores, which is why you'll find article after article instructing women and young girls how to DIY them. I definitely saw plenty of, like, Rosie the Riveter and, mm-hmm, of course, RBG with the necklace and all of that. I've seen so many of that, but I have also seen amazing DIY that these parents are doing for their young kids. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I need that costume.
I would say that was probably when I was researching this, that was a good chunk of the articles on the early Google pages where, you know, like, don't want your young girl to wear a sexy costume. Here's 8 costume ideas of famous historical female figures and how to make them.
Yeah.
Which is another argument that we could make and has been made. It's that that's better for the environment.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on in this conversation.
A lot more than you thought, Annie.
Well, listeners, we would love to know if you've got any cool costumes you would like to share. Please, please, please let us know. Whether you're celebrating or not, we hope you have a lovely, safe weekend. And yes, if you would like to email us, you can. We would love to hear from you. Our email is stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram @StuffOnNeverSoldYou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina.
Happy Halloween, Christina.
Yes. And thanks to you for listening. Stuff On Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.